You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from Los Angeles. I'm Ify Wadiway, and I was the guest on a previous episode, but today I'm back as your host for another round of our ongoing LaRon. Today, my guest is Kathy Yamamoto, who improv might know from Nomi Malone, one of the hottest improv teams out there. I'd say the best around.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Shucks.
I know. This is going to be the first time we actually get up close and personal, because we've met. And
yeah.
We've seen each other around. I'm good friends with Kirby and Oscar. How have you been? How was your drive over here?
Oh, my drive over here was great. I did so many errands. I'm a little OCD, so I make a list every morning of things I need to do, and I crossed out almost all of them, so I'm really excited.
That's dope. That's something I need to do. Like, I was almost late to my interview earlier because I was on Twitch. Like, I was so afraid that, like looking back, like, on Twitch, Cody comments, like, yo, you're supposed to be... It's like, oh man. But yeah, let's kick this off. Let's start it off. I feel like this is the way to start any improv talk. Let's go into your background. How'd you get into improv? How early were you like, I'm funny?
Well, I think the first time I realized I was funny, I used to take traditional Japanese dance classes, like like Memoirs of a Geisha, but authentic. My teacher one day described me as the loud one. I got it wrong. She described me as the funny one, which made me feel really nice until I realized it was polite for the loud one. I was just being very loud. But from that moment on, I was like, I'm going to take that and run with it. But then I didn't really do it a whole lot. In college, there was an improv team. I went to UC Irvine.
Oh, nice.
And I auditioned twice, my very first semester and my very last semester, which is very ill-advised. I would not... advise anyone to do that, but I didn't get on. But instead, I took part in this improvised movement. It's almost like an improvised dance called Viewpoints. And me and my friends used to break into theaters like late at night to practice Viewpoints. And that's when I really started to get into this idea of like follow the follower and like group mind. And then after I graduated, Zach Reno was already doing stuff at UCB.
Oh, nice.
And he went to school with me. So I hit him up and I was like, is this something I should do? And he's like, yeah. So,
yeah, it is always funny because I've gotten that like message or email where it's like, hey, should I do UCB? I was like, do you want to fucking kill it at comedy? that comes off like way more dickish than in my head it did. But like, yeah, no, it's a fun place to be. So I'm always like, come through.
Yeah.
Also, you're the like, I'd say second or third person I've heard who went to like UC Irvine and auditioned twice for the improv team and didn't get on. Yeah.
I want to meet those people.
Yeah. And I've never met a person out here from UC Irvine. So fuck. we get two. So that's my one. Fuck UC Irvine improv. watch I'd be wrong about that. Watch like that. I'm sure someone did come from that, actually.
Well, Zach Reno did. He was.
Well, come see me, Zach. Come get these hands. We're gonna settle this once and for all. Did you audition for Zach?
I did, but it was this big like cult thing. Like it felt like the popular kids all did improv.
Oh, man.
At least for me. I don't know. Yeah. I could be wrong. But when I didn't get on, I didn't really feel bad about myself because I just felt like I wasn't popular enough. I wasn't like cool enough. But I still thought I was funny. But that being said, too, a lot of people auditioned because it was where the popular kids went. And they only had a very limited amount of space. So I didn't feel bad about it.
I feel like, you know, hearing you tell that story, I just feel like I kind of got lucky in my improv career because it took me a while to hear no for the first time. And by the time I've heard no, I already made like Kanye West my mentor and had a like inflated ego of my talent to take those blows that Hollywood gives to you over and over and over and over and over and over again, you know, until you get that win.
You got to have that confidence.
But yeah, like it's that is such a positive like outlook. I feel like you are only going to do great things when you think of things like that. Because with me and Zach Rito wouldn't be homies right now. Like I'd be like my whole movement in UCB was like, oh, like every podcast would be like, yo, Zach, you know, he turned me down, but you see where I'm at, right? but no, I definitely get that. But so you come down here, you take the classes, mm-hmm. and so just double checking, are you from LA?
Yeah, I'm from Culver City, so didn't go far at all.
Yeah, same here. I grew up in Compton.
What?
I grew up in, I don't do it for the gram, I do it for Compton.
We probably played you in basketball.
Oh, yeah. I went to high school in Downey. So it's like it's
we played Downey.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So cool. I didn't play basketball.
Oh.
But
well, I did.
Oh, nice. Yeah, our girls team, our women, I guess high school girls team, women, you know, the female team was good. The male team was trash.
Oh.
So, you know, that's some LA local talk for you. But yeah, it's always I always feel this deep connection when someone else came up out here. So we'll connect more about that.
Oh yeah.
After this. So like what was your first experience like, you know, taking a UCB improv class? Because I know for me, I came in as someone who already did improv and you've done like theater, mm-hmm. but like you weren't coming off the high of like, you know, being on the popular kid improv team. So like, I feel, how was your approach to doing 101 and so on and so forth?
I mean, I loved 101. I loved my teacher. I loved everyone in my class. From 101, we started our first practice team, which I'm not sure if that's super, if that happens very often.
Nope,
oh, great.
Not at all.
We were like super gung-ho and super nerdy from the outset. And we took all our classes together.
Oh,
I'm still
sweet.
Friends with them. Don't improv with them as much as I would like. But I think it was because I found like a community.
Yeah.
Especially since I had started taking classes right after I graduated college. I felt like I didn't really have any friends out here.
Yeah.
I was like really lonely. So part of it was I really liked doing improv.
Mm-hmm.
But another part was like I really liked doing improv with these people. And they became like my friends and my best friends. So,
oh, that's so dope. Yeah, I feel like what you did is what a lot of people promise to do and never end up doing. Like I remember, oh my gosh, my 101, like I feel like, yeah, besides Jamie, who was mentioned on the last podcast, I don't know if I chop it up with anyone from my original 101,
really?
But we all were like, we're going to do it. But it's so funny because, like, what was the composition of actors in your 101? Do you think you...
I would say not large. There weren't very many actors. Okay. There were maybe two, and they both stopped doing improv.
Also, how long ago was 101? Did you take your 101?
I started fall of 2011, I think like November.
So you started like, you know, a little earlier than me. So I started right when UCB was popping. It was hot. Agents were like, yo, you got to take this class, homie. Like it was... So it was at a fever pitch for actors who didn't really give a damn about improv. This, by the way, this is soft PG-13, so
that's why
I'm censoring myself. Who really didn't give that much of a damn about improv. So they were just told to go there by their agent. There wasn't that much passion. So you had to sit there and watch this actor work through, like, comedy scenes and they really don't, and then like as an improv nerd myself just being like offended where it's like you're gonna disgrace, I'm gonna just talk like my dad, you are going to come in here and disgrace this improv sanctuary with your acting, you know. I feel like I'm talking too much.
No. I mean I got lucky because I know that was also happening when I was in 101, and that's truthfully part of the reason I took it as well, is because I was like, I want to be in commercials.
Yeah.
And this is how you do it. Because I knew nothing. I thought, you know, agents just came to 101 grad shows, which apparently is not the case. But there were half of us were really passionate, gung-ho about improv, and those are that's the half that I like stuck with, and half were actors. And it's not I don't think I was offended by them ever. It was more that they like made me very nervous because they were so unpredictable on stage, because oftentimes they didn't trust their instincts, so it would go crazy immediately. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. There are agents out here, you know, maybe. I don't want to be in a scene with you if you're going to go crazy.
Yeah.
But I mean, they were all very nice people. You know, they're very nice. I don't keep in touch with them, so I don't know what they're doing, but I hope they're being stars.
Yeah. They're killing it.
I hope so.
Yeah. I'm real posy.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, poop on them, if you will, because they were very nice.
Yeah. So it seemed like that's very fun and interesting to hear that you had, like, you know, these expectations kind of going through the class. What are some of the expectations you've had that you feel have been correct? And what are some of the ones that you look back and you're like, why did I think that was a thing?
Well, I truly, truly thought that, like, the theater was swarming with agents and managers every day, all the time, maybe even classes, which is not true. But I guess I also expected to gain a sense of, like, confidence about my joke making and also like my social skills, which I think is a really nice offshoot skill that you learn from UCB taking classes, and just to make a lot of friends, which I know sounds like really sad, but I truly was so lonely. I just wanted friends.
I mean, I feel like improv is a great place to find friends. It really, I don't know. So I don't think it's sad to be like, I want friends. I feel like it's a great place to find friends, and they're all funny.
Yeah, and so nice and so open.
Oh yeah, you know, it's. I feel weird going back to my regular friends and constantly being like, oh, that's my friend, when it's a commercial. And I feel like I'm so afraid of trying to come off like I'm trying to name drop when it's really, no, I'm genuinely surprised that I see Kathy in this Quiznos commercial.
Crossing my fingers. I do that to my mom when I feel bad about myself because it instantly impresses her.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's my friend doing like a one-liner on a commercial or in a TV show. She like instantly is like, you're on the right path.
Yeah.
Even though she wasn't like that before.
Oh, this is very good because I feel like there's going to be some similarities here. What do you feel was like, what was your parents' like view on you doing improv? Like, were they like for it, or were they like, why are you doing this? This is not.
Oh, definitely. Why are you doing this? My dad is Japanese American, and my mom is an immigrant from Poland. So very similar, like, you should get a useful job that makes money type of a mentality. So when I wanted to go to college for drama, they were like, okay, but you need a backup. So I double majored. And then when I was like, oh, I think I still want to be an actor or a writer in L.A., they're like, okay, we'll give it a few years, and then hopefully you'll grow out of it.
Yeah.
They're very nice people. Love them to death. Oh, yeah. But
that was literally the same approach, like this backup thing. And I think it was like Amy Poehler who they like in some interview, they're like, oh, how do you feel you do this? Like, it was because I didn't have a backup. It was this or nothing. And I think that's when I was like, Dad, I'm sorry, but it's over. It's over. I'm going all in. Well, let's talk about some improv now. You were doing improv, even though it wasn't with the Irvine team. Were you doing improv outside of UCB?
When I started, no. I mean, I did a lot of that physical movement improv, but that's, like, not funny. It's very weird. It's fun to do, not fun to watch, in my opinion. And then once I got to UCB, I went through all the classes. I was very gung-ho UCB. After a few house team auditions and I didn't make it on, I was like, oh, well, let me explore other places, like grow as an improviser. I took a few classes at Nerdist, took a few classes at the Clubhouse, liked them all.
Oh, nice.
Want to still have plans to take a class at Groundlings. Just trying to really stretch and grow and, you know, try out different viewpoints of improv.
Yeah, I feel like there are two different types of, like, UCB students. You have your student who is like you, and, you know, you want to taste everything. And I feel like that's the best student to be. See, I'm student number two, which is, like, I'm UCB to the day I die. And I think it's because I grew up around gang banging. And so, like, this is my gang. You know, you might see me around Growlings, but I ain't seeing a show. I'm just banging on people. But yeah, so, but have you ever tried to incorporate that, like, kind of movement and improvised movement to improv at all?
I think the way it affects me most is I follow that. My first instinct in improv is always to follow. So if someone's being a character, my instinct is to be a peas in a pod, because one of the principles of viewpoints is following the follower. So you're always following someone else. You're never doing your own thing. You're moving as a group. So that's where that's how that affected my instincts. And I think it also made me a little more open to trying out different things in improv, in terms of like trying out different styles within a Herald, like in terms of like group games and stuff. It made me more open to like going out on a limb and trying something, because I know someone will follow me and then I'll get to follow them, and the responsibility's off me now.
So like when they hit you with that follow the follower warm up, you're like, I got this.
Oh, I could do that literally for 2 hours, and I used to do it for 2 hours.
Like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Let's keep going. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel that your improv style has changed from 101 to now on stage with Nomi Malone?
Oh my gosh. It's just changed completely. I mentioned before when people would do crazy moves on stage, I would get scared and I'd be like, I don't want to play with you. I try my best not to be that way anymore, especially since bigger moves can be the most fun. So I try not to shy away from those, and I try to make bigger moves because I used to follow all the time. Now I try to like make my own moves, and I definitely take more responsibility and ownership over the whole show, because I definitely remember in 101 I used to be like, this is my scene. I'm responsible for this scene. You guys are on your own for the rest, you know?
Yeah, that's always so interesting, because there is that thing with improv where I feel like, you know, one of the sayings I've heard is like, if you look good in improv, it's because your scene partner. Mm-hmm. And if your scene partner looks good, it's because of you.
Right.
So that's how I kind of like tried to go into scenes as versus, you know.
Yeah.
So do you feel like you're the same way now, where you're like, okay, I'm going to like make this person look good?
I mean, I try my best to do that. I definitely think that the best improvisers you don't normally talk about after the show.
Yeah.
Because they're in the back really like navigating and trying to make sense of the whole show.
Yeah.
So I try to do that. Whether or not I succeed is a different story. But I think that's definitely important to keep in mind when you're improvising, especially if you're one that tends to do bigger moves, is to really try to find a way to support your other teammates within those big moves.
Okay. I feel, by the way, cut that out.
No, keep
like,
it in. Keep
like,
it in.
Like, I hate how I said okay, but I meant to say like okay. Yeah. But it came out like okay.
Well, I could feel myself starting to lecture, so I was like, I like that you said okay that way, because I was like, okay, get back to being you were a good. Real person.
No, I'm like, I feel like this is a constant battle between both of us feeling like we're talking too much, when it's like, no, I'm interviewing. I need to shut up because I ramble a lot.
See, it's my viewpoints coming in, though. Yeah. I want to follow you into this, you know?
I feel like, you know, so far we've talked a lot about, like, you know, you said, like, you didn't get on the Irvine team, and then mm-hmm. you kind of explored after not getting on. I want to talk about your successes. Like, what are some, like, big successes in your improv career that you've been real proud of?
These past 2 years, I was lucky enough to get a callback for Herald auditions, and that made me so proud of myself. Mostly because I am not a good improv auditioner, because I get so nervous. So I was really proud of myself for like pushing my nerves down and doing the best I could, and really like being proud of the work I was doing within those auditions. So I got to be on a mess hall team last year, and so much fun. So much fun. And I felt like we really did some good work. We really wanted to be the best we could. So we practiced more than we were supposed to. We tried to meet up more than we were supposed to. We really wanted to be good. And now on my Herald team, it's been so fun as well. And it's been interesting for me on this Herald team, because everyone on my team I look up to, like outside of my, I look up to them so much. I think they're so good. So every show, every practice for me has been living up to their standards, you know, trying to meet them, which I think is great. It's a great challenge for me because they're so funny. I want to make them proud, you know?
Yeah, I feel like that's the best frame of mind to be in on a team or in, I think, just in general, like on a team, on a set, in a room, is to feel like you're surrounded by amazing people.
Yeah.
Because that only, because like you're amazing in your own right, but going in with that mindset, you're now only trying to get better.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes, you know, you do get those negative Nancys who think they're better than everyone there, and you watch them and you're like, oh, well, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of like the other side of the double-edged sword of the cool thing of improv where, like, really, if someone looks good, it's probably from their scene partner. And there are some people who take that and think, no, because I'm good.
Right.
And it's like, oh,
although
man.
I just thought of another one that I was proud of.
Yeah.
Okay. So around the time I finished my first 401, I was feeling real down on myself.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not good at this. Was real in my head. I was like, I'm never going to be good at this. This is too hard. So I was lucky enough to get into advanced study after my first 401, but I was like, I am not nowhere near confident enough to play with the big boys. You know, I gotta go back and take a few more classes before I try out advanced study. So then I took another 401, and in our final show, I did an initiation that to this day I'm super proud of. And it was at that moment where I was like, no, you got this. Like, just get out of your head. You know, you got this.
Yeah.
Trust in yourself.
That's so good. It's so funny because, like, you know, nothing against you, but that is like my biggest pet peeve is when someone's like, no, I'm not good enough yet. And it's like, look, if you got that into advanced study, you are good enough. Like, don't doubt your teachers. They're not just letting people in there. Because I had a friend who, like, you know, he actually finished the program before me. And he would, like, I was like, oh, are you going to, it was back before you had to be in advanced study to audition for Harold. And he was like, oh, are you going to do it? He was like, well, I'm not ready yet. It was like, you'll never be ready. Like, that's, and I think that's the advice I just want to give to anyone listening, though, is just, like, you're never gonna technically be ready. A lot of people get stuff before they think they're ready.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, you gotta go with the flow and try your best. No one's ever gonna hate on you for trying your best. One thing I wanted to hit on is you seem like a very positive person. You're very collaborative. You're very supportive. You work well with people. So how is that dynamic, you know, kind of being that type of person to flip the switch and now it's like competitive mode for, you know, auditioning for Harold and Mess Hall?
Yeah, I mean, that's always a weird conundrum for improvisers, I think, because we're taught to be supportive in our scenes, right? But I think another thing I had to get over with is this idea of being polite, because I'm a very polite person, I think, anyway, in real life. So I had to get over the sense that, like, let them speak, you know, let them get their ideas first and then you can go. You know, they know what they're doing. Let them go. So then I had to kind of train myself to be like, this is your time too. You know, your time is as valuable as theirs is. So if you have an idea, just go for it.
Yeah.
So I try to think of those auditions as less a competition anyway, because to me, and I've never been in the room, so I don't know this for sure, but from what I see, it seems like it's a numbers game anyway. There are so many people who are so good who should be on a Harold team, but maybe there's not enough space for them that year. I don't know how it works. So to me, it feels less like a competition, more like this is a time where we get to play for whatever, 25 minutes. So let's try to have fun.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where it's like a numbers game, but it's also you're being judged off of one scene.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many scenes in improv, and you have good scenes, you have bad scenes, you have good days, you have bad days.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be judged on one day, there is so much chance. You may not mesh well with someone in a scene and that has nothing to do with you. That could be the energy they're bringing, but that kind of, you know, interacts with yours and there's no reason to be mad about it. I think it was a lot more cutthroat earlier because there weren't that many opportunities to perform outside of Herald teams. But now you have Herald teams, mess hall teams, you have Inner Sanctum shows, you have, you know, there's so many opportunities to perform that now I feel like, whenever you hear like a younger improviser either, and they're like, oh man, I didn't get on Herald teams. Like, you didn't know. You haven't been there back in the days when you had to, there was only a few indie shows and you had to wait a month to get up and do improv.
Oh, I remember those days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You were in it before me. So you remember way before me. So back on the improv track.
Yeah.
This is, and I feel like this is a great segue from that weird bit I just did. what is the, because this podcast is listened to a lot of fans of improv, students. Sure. Impart some knowledge. What's some advice that you wish you would have heard when you started doing improv?
It's weird because we got these questions beforehand and I should have thought about them.
Oh, don't worry. I didn't even read anything.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Cut that out too.
I guess for me, one part is just do it. I was so nervous before I started doing improv, and it's not as scary as it seems once you just go for it. And I think that it applies to people not just thinking about taking classes or thinking about auditioning, but thinking about moves. Just do it. Just try it, especially in class. Like, who cares? Just one of my pet peeves in class is when people say, well, I was thinking about doing this move, but I wasn't sure how it was going to go.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, it's just like, well, just try it. Let's see. Let's see how it'll go. Also, I don't know if this will contradict what I said before, but in terms of crazy moves, which I now love, I think you should feel like you can go crazy, because I think sometimes, especially after 201, students really, myself included, get really in your head and you start second guessing everything and you don't want to go too crazy because, like, what if that throws off the game? But I think you should allow yourself to have fun and go crazy as long as you commit to it.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's the most important thing is you can get away with almost anything in improv as long as you commit.
Yeah. Yeah, and those are some of the best scenes.
Also, I want to circle back to that thing you said earlier, because I think that is the most important thing for students. And I remember, I forget which teacher I saw. I feel like it was Johnny Meeks. But they said, like, if you're ever unsure about a move, the class is the most important place to try it, because you have someone there who can tell you if it was a good move, bad move, how it could have worked, why it didn't work, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's better to take that risk in a class than on stage. And then, like, if it works, then you don't know why it worked. Or if it fails, you don't know why it failed.
I definitely remember, too, one important lesson I learned from a class with Mr. Eugene Cordero was it was my first 401. And I was very hesitant because I was, like I said before, very in my head. Didn't want to mess up the Herald for anyone, you know? So I do a lot of backline, like, juts out, you know, when I wanted to edit, but I wasn't sure. And he said, like, the audience can see you when you do that, first of all. So just go for it. Because then it makes, this is me adding on, but it makes, like, them uncomfortable because they see you thinking about a move and not doing it.
Yeah.
But if you feel yourself, like, jutting, he said, just lean back and push yourself against the wall to just do it.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that was a nice trick.
So Eugene was the one you took 401 with and got in on your first.
Yes.
Look, Eugene's my boy now. He was my 401. Did not pass me my first time. And you see how dope I am.
You're so dope. Just so dope.
No, but see, like, Eugene was known as, like, because here's the type of thing students talk about is when they're like, which teacher should I take if I want to, like, pass? Like, that's the question I get so much. And really the answer is, like, no one. Like anyone. But like, people, like, you know, people, like, the word on the street was, like, Eugene never passes anyone their first 401. Never does. And, like, now I'm finding out, no, that's not true. But it really is based off of your skills, you know? But yeah, that's what's so interesting is for all those kids listening trying to hear. Yeah, don't take Eugene if you want to pass your first.
He was great though. He's legitimately one of my favorite teachers.
He is, and it's so funny because even though, like, on paper, not passing my 401, I should have been like, just my personality type should have been like so just mad about it. But like, I felt like I got so much out of Eugene's class because really the one thing that we're I think students aren't mad about taking another class. They're mad about paying another $400-something.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I get. It's rough in these streets. I had the diversity scholarship. If you're a woman or a person of color or LGBTQ or I think over 40, sign up for diversity scholarship. It really helps out. And I think that's also why I wasn't mad.
And work study.
Yeah.
The work study really saved my butt.
Oh, yeah. It was called probably the same thing with you, internship, when we did it. And that also is great. That's also why it's worth it, like, you know, really building a relationship with these teachers in your class because you will need them as a recommend for your work study application. So what are some, like, forms and openings that you love doing? And what are some forms and opening that you hate?
Oh, getting deep.
Oh, yeah. We're getting that nasty.
I love me a sound of movement. Sound and movement, first
See,
of all.
I feel like it's come. Yeah, it's because from it's, your background. It's,
you get to do viewpoints for 4 to 5 minutes. That's a long opening. But, but I love sound and movement. I think, I don't know, I love weird stuff like that. I think it's so fun. Truly forced my mess hall team to do a sound and movement because I wanted to so bad. I thought it was so fun. And it will be my favorite opening forever. I really like a mono scene. But similar to viewpoints, I think a mono scene most times is fun to be in, not so fun to watch.
I you know, it depends because some people can really bring life to it. And it really is like your team has to be ready to do a mono scene because I feel like teams agree to do mono scenes and not everybody wants to do a mono scene. And you really feel it when you're in a scene with them. You really, really feel it. And I think it's because it's challenging because, you know, I feel like since when you do like something like a montage, your character only needs to hold up for about like 2 to 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
When you do a mono scene, these characters need to be strong enough to last sometimes 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So there has to be depth. There has to be, you really have to take more time into developing that relationship where you are, you know.
You have to be more comfortable with, especially in the beginning, not getting any laughs.
Oh, yeah.
Just like truly.
Oh, yeah. It's because I've seen it so many, like, I feel like Big Grande does the mono scene so well because, and it's just because their relationship and Drew Tarver, you know, like all the guys in Big Grande are great, but like Drew will always make a move that will, like, it's also one of those things where it's just like Drew is even funnier because of the way that Dan and Ryan. Yeah, John Mackey. There's, oh man, why did I think there was three people in Big Grande? Oh man, sorry. Well, they're not going to listen to my episode.
I'm going to send it to them right now.
I know. But no, the way that they react to Drew's craziness and like Dan always comes up with funny characters, but they create these like very thick, strong foundations for their characters that makes it fun to watch.
Yeah. I guess maybe I should backtrack. If you,
no, I didn't mean to shit on you. It's like, you know, you see, here's why you're wrong. Here's why you're wrong. No, I'm
no, I think definitely if you see like good people do it, good people who are having fun do it. But I think a lot of times, at least in my experience, when I've seen mono scenes in indie shows, it's a lot of people being like not having fun.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think this is an unpopular opinion, and I don't want anyone to think shades of disses or anything, but stop doing mono scenes in indie shows. There's not enough time. There's like, and I remember Chad Diamante banned mono scenes from his show Catsby, and he had it like, and you know, Chad's like a super huge improv nerd. So he explained, he wrote a long ass explanation why. But it's like, yeah, there's not a, like, for all the reasons we both kind of explained, I feel like, you know, those like 3 to 5 minute sets you usually get in the indie show, you really can't make a good mono scene happen.
No, yeah. But I love to do it.
All right. You know, so let's close this out with a positive note, the same way that Mono did for me. And I thought it was a great question.
Ooh.
What are some goals you have for the rest of your career, both here at UCB and just in general, too?
Oh, wow. Oh, what a good question.
Yeah. Improv career. This is an improv podcast.
Sure. I mean, I would just love to do improv consistently and have fun doing improv consistently. You know, I feel sometimes you see people do improv because they feel like they have to.
Yeah.
And I never want to be that person. I just, I always want to enjoy myself while doing improv and do it consistently.
I feel that's a really good goal. That's an amazing goal.
It's one that's hard to check off a to-do list, though.
Yeah.
You write it on a to-do
list. Yeah, because, you know, you never know if you're still doing it. Do you feel like you have any interest in, like, teaching? Have you been coaching now that you're on a Herald team?
I have started coaching, and it's so fun. I would love to teach. I think that would definitely – I mean, not that I have a backup because Amy Poehler said not to have a backup. But if I had a backup, it would definitely be just a regular teacher because I love teaching. I love helping people grow. But I also – I do love writing, so – that's something I also do.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, get that TV writing gig. Yeah. I that's one thing I looked up to as we start closing this out. I keep saying that because I feel Zig's eyes on me. But, like, that's one of the cool things. I wonder if it was the same for you coming up through improv, is seeing these improvisers hit the stage who are also working. Like, especially, like, I remember I was shaking. I was, like, literally shaking and sweating when I went to go see Shitty Jobs because I was so excited to see Donald Glover. And then my classmate who was next to me, she was shaking because she was so excited to see Ben Schwartz. Neither of them showed up that day. But it was a great show. Shitty Jobs is a great team without those two.
Yeah.
But yeah, do we do plugs? Yeah, where can people see you?
People can see me on Herald Night for Nomi Malone. I also... our possibly last date for Best Friends Club, number one, a great idea, is this coming Tuesday, May 16th. I don't know if this will be out in time. So it won't be out in time. So
you missed it.
You missed it, and it was a great show.
Yeah, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Did you see it?
I'm going to go see it.
Okay. You better now.
I know.
I'll be looking for you.
I'm on record. All right. Well, that was Long Form Conversation. Tune into the next episode when Kathy will be your host. So thank you. You guys are amazing. And I get to sign off as I wish. So I will say once again that I don't do it for the gram. I do it for Compton. Damn.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.